Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. This is episode 100. I'm very excited to be here today with my very special guests, Chris Schmidt. How are you, sir?
Hi there. Happy 100.
Happy 100. And Chad Ashley, how have you been?
I'm good. Happy 100.
Happy 100. So we started this, the like second season, let's call it, of the podcast, over 50 episodes ago, I want to say. And man, it's been fun. We're going to take a little season break after this episode, but we got a fun episode here. We got some announcements. We got some free stuff to give away. We have a little NAB update. We have a bunch of stuff going on for the last podcast. So thanks, first of all, to all of you that listen and download and listen to this podcast or watch them on YouTube. We have a lot of fun doing this, and I appreciate it. So let's get into it. I mean, you know, we could talk about ourselves all dang day. I mean, I know I can, but let's help some people. Let's talk about. I feel like it's been too long. What did we miss? NAB. Let's talk about NAB for a second. We had an amazing time at NAB. It was really fun for us. We had about half the company out in Vegas.
Yeah, that was super cool. It was my favorite NAB I think ever.
Yeah, it was really fun. And there was we got to talk about the Sunday party. So
good.
First of all, if for all of you that came up and said hi, and it was so nice to, it's always nice to like meet customers and hang out with everybody. So if I saw you there, met you there, it was really cool to meet you. The Sunday party was bonkers. You guys want to talk about that experience?
Oh, that was super crazy. Yeah. I think you should start with a story of what that party was last year and how it turned into what it turned into this year. Cause I think it was amazing.
So last year,
exponential,
yeah, it was fun.
NAB is amazing. Cause it's always hard to catch up with everybody and friends and people you meet in the industry over the years. And NAB over the last 5 years, I'd say in particular, has really become a place where you just see all your friends from the industry and people that you've met over the years. And so, okay. So last year, Joey from School of Motion and I were talking and we're just like, well, maybe we just, you know, send out a tweet and invite anybody that happens to be in Vegas out to the bar and we'll just kind of hang out and make a little meetup. I was like, that's a great idea. So we got on Twitter, Instagram, whatever, and got the word out. And some of the locals, some people there for NAB, we all kind of met up in like a big corner booth. If you can imagine like a big corner booth at a big restaurant, it was at the Yard House in Vegas. That's where it was. And we kind of filled up that booth and we were like, yeah, this is really cool. Maybe 20, 30 people. You were there, right, Chris?
Yeah, about 20, I think at the max, because we all fit in that booth.
I remember that. There was like, wasn't it... I want to say it was mostly School of Motion people, right?
Yep. And it was just like a little
crew.
Yeah. It's just like a little meetup. So this year we thought, you know what? That was pretty cool to meet everybody and meet customers and fans and all that. Let's get the word out a little bit earlier. That's kind of how it started. Like, all right, let's ask a couple of our other friends that are, you know, doing education and software for this industry to kind of help out and get the word out about this thing. And we'll just have like a little meetup, you know, maybe 50, 100 people will show up this time. Well, as we all know, it went from 100 people to 200 people and kept growing. And it went to a point where the bar was like, all right, well, you now need to basically like buy the bar out for the night. You have to close this place down to the public and basically rent it from us for the night. And we're like, I think we could pull it off. So we got everybody to kind of agree to that. And we ended up with this amazing party and a ton of great sponsors. Maxon, Red Giant was a part of it. Now that I name names, I'm going to miss somebody. I got to get them all. Lloyd was there from AE Scripts. We had Joey and his crew put on, like they really, took the brunt of like getting that place set up, getting all the tickets, getting all that stuff rocking. So thanks to School of Motion.
They did a great job with the, even the bands had like logos on it and stuff.
Oh, it was amazing. Andrew Kramer showed up from Video Copilot. He was sponsoring. they had MoGraph Mentor and Chris Doe from the future was there. I got to make sure I get my logos. I'm going to be bummed if I miss somebody. But of course, Maxon and Red Giant sponsored. And it ended up being, it ended up being like my favorite party of the week, I have to say. Like, it was really cool to meet everybody. And I feel like the motion design community has been growing. I feel like it's a lot more connected than it used to be. And that party kind of like, it showed that we could fill up a room like that and be such a big part of NAB, you know?
The energy was fantastic too. Like, just people, I think what worked so well for that party is it was the Sunday before the exhibits. So everybody just flew in or has only been there a couple days and they're just amped for the week. And that energy carried right into the party. And so everybody was just so great. Everybody was so positive. There's just all these people just talking and a lot of people coming up about the podcast. Actually, we got so many people coming up to us, thanking us for the podcast and saying how much they enjoy it. So thank you to all of you that came up to us and said how much you love it. We love making it. So that was great to hear those things.
I have never met so many people in a row where it's like, oh, there's Chad over there. I haven't seen him all day. I'm going to go say hi. And I couldn't make it over to you from all the awesome people I was meeting from all over the world. Mm. People just jumping in. Like, it's so fun to know that some of the stuff that we're putting out there in the world means a lot to people.
It was really there was that crew that came in from Qatar, from the Middle East.
Yep.
They came in and they're like, we came in just for this party and to meet you guys and to like check out what NAB is too. But they're like, this is the party. So what a great time. And I know we're already like talking about, you know, trying to do this again next year. So keep an eye out. If you're near Vegas, if you're coming to NAB, keep an eye out for it next year. Cause I have a feeling, I mean, we were at capacity that night and I think we were like 10 people away from turning people away.
I know people were being stopped at the door.
Yeah, it was
for a while.
It was pretty crazy. Quickly. So
I thought for sure it wasn't going to be big. Like I, cause you know, here's a funny inside story. About an hour before the doors were supposed to open, Mike, our new director of marketing, and I were just hanging out and we're like, oh, let's just walk by the venue and just see if there's anybody in there setting up. Maybe we could help or whatnot. So we deep down, we wanted to see if there was anybody like waiting outside or if there was anybody going to come. So like maybe 45 minutes to an hour before, we walk in front of this place and there's nobody in the place and there's nobody outside the place. And we're like, you know what? I bet a bunch of people RSVP'd and they can't make it or they got busy or something happened. I bet we get maybe 80 people to show up. So we go back to the bar, of course, to get another drink. And figure we don't want to show up.
It is big.
You know, we don't want to show up like before the doors open. And so we just kind of were killing time waiting for you guys, I think, to finish up with something. And so when we walked over at the time the event was starting, or maybe like 5 minutes after, it was like, where did all these people come from? It was all of a sudden, it was like a line down the street and like the place was filling up and it was like chaos and just people just, you know, having fun. And it was just great. And I was like, what the heck just happened? Like a half hour ago, this place was a ghost town. And that's when I knew like, okay, this party is a thing and we have to do it next year because it's amazing.
It was awesome.
Yeah. It was so much fun, man.
That was just like, what a great kickoff to the week. And of course, the rest of the week was awesome. The Maxon booth was, again, a great place to meet everybody and hang out. They had such a great energy at the booth this year, too. Great presenters, as always. In fact, before I forget, they're just now starting. I mean, I shouldn't say just now. It's only been a couple weeks. But they're already putting out the Cineversity videos from the booth. So
the first batch is already out.
Yeah, the first batch is already out, and they're going to be releasing them over the next few weeks. So keep an eye open for that. They've been like faster turnaround on that every year. And so if you miss anything from the Maxon booth, keep an eye out. We're going to be posting it on our blog, our blog in general has been crazy lately. So definitely go check that out. We're going to be announcing that again. And And I just pulled up the flyer. I got everybody. I named all the sponsors. I can't believe it. It's easier. Nice. It's easy when they're all friends. It's nice to remember. But a big thanks again to School of Motion, all the sponsors for that party. And I would love to do that again next year for sure. So the rest of the week, really quickly, there was the Media Motion Ball on Monday. It's always nice to see everybody there. There was the pinball party, which we sponsored this year as well. So we were excited to do that again. We sponsored with Maxon puts on the pinball party, and we were excited to be a part of that. We had a pinball tournament. Chris was showing people how to get rubber duckies from a claw machine. Yeah.
That's not pinball party night anymore. That's rubber ducky night.
That's rubber ducky night. Chris was
I love that element. Night. That's such a fun night. I enjoy every part of it. Like the food trucks are great. The pinball.
Oh man, that food truck is so good. I forget what it's like. Korean barbecue. What kind of food was that?
It's like an Asian fusion.
It's like a fusion thing.
Yeah, that's so good.
Oh, and I think there's. I think I started a new like tradition. So me and Chad. He's the not this Chad. Chad, the CEO of Red Giant. Got into a battle. All right. I gotta get this out because he challenged me to a pinball and Miss Pac-Man tournament battle. And I was like, he's gone. He has no idea who he's messing with, right? So I say, you pick the pinball machine, we'll play it, we'll battle, and then we'll go play a game of Miss Pac-Man. And he picks pinball machine I think I picked it. And I picked one I'm not really that great at. And I ended up killing it, just like I had like my game of the year on this game, just smoked it. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to feel really bad when I like beat him at Miss Pac-Man. Cause I like Miss Pac-Man too. So we get over there. He plays for like 10 minutes on his first miss. It's Miss Pac-Man on his first miss, and she's going and going. And he's like already at, you know, level banana before he dies this first time. And I'm like, dang it. All right. But then I'm like, I catch up a little bit, and our scores are like kind of going together every time we die. It's getting closer and closer. And he ends up smoking me, man. He killed it. And I was like, you know what? I love a challenge like that. So instantly I'm like, all right, well, there you go. You know, we're doing this again next year. We have to. And so like now I can't get it out of my mind. Like I got to practice my Miss Pac-Man. So anyway, for those of you who can't make it to NAB or not there, hopefully we'll do a little justice. It's very fun. There's a lot of people there. Man, I always recommend it if you could sneak out for even a few days.
Oh, yeah. Actually, for anybody listening from the regular Chicago crew, there's already talk that next year is going to be a big Chicago crew heading to Vegas for NAB. They did it. We did that as a group like 5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. And it was really cool getting like 20 people out from the local Chicago community and getting the word out early this year. So
that's awesome. Really cool.
Awesome. Well, let's move on here. We have, I mentioned the Cineversity stuff. Keep an eye open on the Grayscale Gorilla blog, which, by the way, I'm going to link up all this stuff down below. Any notes that we talk about. So all the check out the blog over the next few weeks for more Cineversity and recordings from NAB if you missed any of those. Really great presentations. Let's see here. Chris, you want to tell us about the latest 5-second projects, and then I'll tell everybody about our new free download that's on the site.
Totally. So I'm super excited. 5-second projects are back. I've been wanting them ever since they kind of went away. I've been wanting them to come back again. So they're back. Stronger than ever. We did kind of a trial run month, kind of in secret, and that worked well. Our new process did. So we just completed our second month. I shouldn't say completed. The deadline just ended. We're in the process as a company of kind of voting and figuring out who won. But if you're not familiar with 5-second projects, every month we're going to come up with a kind of like one or two word topic. And then you have to make a 5-second video, a 5-second, I shouldn't say video, a 5-second motion graphics piece, but it doesn't have to be Cinema 4D. It could be stop motion. It could be some sort of special effects. It could be anything that's kind of creative in a 5-second format, upload it to YouTube and then share it with your peers, get feedback. Everybody competes a little bit and then we post the winners up online. And next month we do it all over again. And man, it's been so much fun seeing all of the different entries come in and all the cool stuff people come up with and weird interpretations of the topic. And I've been talking with a couple different people, and one of the things that I think is really cool, and it's really strange, but you know, everybody's doing the daily renders, lots of daily renders. But as soon as you say, hey, you're competing, and not only are you competing, you have a 5-second deadline. It like flips a couple switches in your brain where you're like, oh, like I'm competing. I got to try extra hard on here. I got to do something special. I got to do something that's going to stand out. And the 5-second thing, that's enough time to like tell a little story or tell a joke. And people go and they start doing sound design for the first time and implementing music and just going really overboard in a way that a daily render, you don't think about it that way. But as soon as you flip these switches, like, oh, like I'm learning all this cool new stuff that I wouldn't have done otherwise. So it's a real kind of, and because we have this really strict deadline, this really strict topic and a really strict length that it has to be, you suddenly have like these production elements that you don't get in your normal daily render. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's my favorite part about it too. It's kind of like it can help you no matter where you are in your career, which is nice. It's like if you're just starting and you're looking to put more stuff in your reel that's not, you know, schoolwork or not a tutorial, this gives you the ability to have a creative idea, push against some topic, and have a really strict deadline and have a really strict time limit. Say, look, make a cool 5-second thing, and then that could just go directly in your reel. Like you now have a cool new 5-second thing to add to your like portfolio and practice and learn. And if you're further in your career, sometimes you get a job where maybe you're working on something that's not so creative, or you know, you just want to like mix it up a little bit. This gives you an excuse to kind of like come home and work on something that is, you know, that has a deadline, that you're a part of, you know, this contest, but that at the end, again, you can have it for your reel, you can have it as a creative outlet, or maybe you just like, you're really interested in learning X particles or Houdini, and you want a way to like kind of experiment and play with it. I see a lot of people do that too. Like I got a new tool, got a new plugin, I want to play with it. I want to make a 5-second project with it. So, I'm excited. We got some really cool ones, already in. And so, yeah, check that out. Where can people find out more about that? I think we have a URL, right?
If you just Google 5-second projects, I think it pops up. But yeah, we have a specific URL that we will make sure that we put in the podcast notes.
Yeah, I want to say it's with a 5.
5-second projects.
All right, going in the notes, folks. And by the way, the notes are here on YouTube. If you look, if you're watching, you could go down below and just click on those. Or if you're listening, just head on over to our website and find episode 100, and we'll have all those things, all of this stuff linked out. So awesome. 5-second projects. Let's talk about this free stuff and our another new free page that's happening over at Grayscale. I got to get the link for this too. So we made a new page called Free Downloads, and this is all the free stuff that we've been offering for years, and some stuff's new, some stuff's older. We have a model pack that you could download for free. We have all the layouts that we use in production. We have scene files, even from the latest tutorial that you guys did, the art gallery scene file. We have scripts and flag I'm just scrolling through. There's like too much to mention. Our trap code presets that I made years ago that I still see in production, like the ink drop and the sparkler preset and all that, you can download. The goal of this page is to put all the free stuff that we have ever put out and will ever put out in one place. So you can just go here and get it. And the reason I'm mentioning is not only because it's a new page and it kind of makes it a lot easier for you to go find out, you know, new tools, new free stuff to play with. But there's a brand new one here, and it's from NAB. So we packaged up a bunch of stuff from NAB and made a new free download that you can go find over at this page. And it's grayscalegorilla.com/free-downloads. I'll put that link down below as well. And here you'll find this free preset scripts and scene files. And this is from... most of this is from NAB, so it's my hardware OpenGL presentation that I did. I mentioned this workflow that I've been using, the hardware OpenGL renderer, and I showed a script that allows you to basically clean up your viewport before you hit render, and we call it filter switch. Then you can learn more about it, watch a video about it, and download it for free over at that site. Also included in that zip file are my presentation scene files and also some of Chris's presentation scene files as well from NAB.
Yeah.
And also my layout as well. So I've made a new Cinema 4D layout ever since I've been playing more with this GPU stuff. I've made a kind of a new layout in Cinema. So you could use that as well if that helps. Chris, what scene files did you include in this thing?
Oh, I don't even remember all of the ones that I put in there, but all the ones I thought would be fun for people to go in and dissect. I think there's this animated fairy character, and it's all about adding Sketch and Toon-esque effects to make it look more imperfect, and people seem to really like that one. And I included my Dungeons & Dragons map kind of generator in there. So just fun ways of using Cinema in ways you wouldn't normally think about. And there's a couple others. I can't remember super specifically.
Yeah. So go ahead and grab it. We'll put the link down below. And again, check this page, maybe bookmark it. We're going to have more stuff coming up. And in fact, we have an announcement for another free thing that'll be out soon from Chris as well that we should probably get to. All right. Yeah. Well, you know what? This is what happens when we don't do a podcast for a few weeks. We have so much to talk about. And we still haven't got to our topic. So let's tease a topic a little bit. What do you do on your last episode of the season, right? Do you talk about how great the podcast was and your favorite moments and all this stuff? Do you do a flashback episode? Do you get, you know, like
everybody loves a flashback episode.
Everyone That's loves great. A flashback
Seinfeld,
episode.
Like, yeah, so just you a get, clip show.
Yeah, you get locked in the cellar and then you have to remember things and
that's so if we were a sitcom, that's what would happen.
Right. They're like locked. Like, oh, man, remember that's that funny. Time? Diddly-doo, diddly-doo. So, so, you know, what do you do? Well, OK, well, that sounds like a thing you do. But not us, folks, not us here at Grayscale Gorilla. We think, you know, what how do we think of this? Right. We're going through ideas. What do we do for our last podcast? We celebrate, we show all of our successes, we talk about all the great things. Nope, we do the opposite. We talk about our biggest failures, things that didn't go right as artists, as a company. And so why are we going to talk about our biggest failures? Well, to me, that's what a creative career is all about, is making mistakes and figuring out how to get through them. That's what we do as artists. That's what we do as creative people in front of new technology that's changing constantly. And something, especially when we're at an event like NAB and meeting, you know, some of our customers and people that are maybe just new in their career, so many people think that, you know, you get to a certain place and you learned everything, you know everything, and then it's smooth sailing from there. And I think it's always a good reminder for everybody in every creative career and position to remind ourselves that messing up is a huge part of a creative career and a creative life. So we're going to share some of our biggest failures over the last few years and mostly try and help, right? To try and talk about what we maybe could have done differently and help you in your career, maybe help you not make the same mistakes, but also understand that that's just a part of the process. So that'll be pretty fun. We have a couple more announcements here before we get to that. Speaking of our last episode, we have our favorite podcast blog post that should be up by the time this episode airs. So instead of doing a clip show of flashing back to all of our favorite moments, instead what we did is we collected our favorite podcasts over the last couple of years and made a post. So if you're new to the podcast or if this is your first episode, definitely click below on the favorite podcast blog post and check out, you know, start with those. If you're new to the podcast, you're listening to this, go check that out. We talk about a ton of different topics, all designed to try and help anyone in their motion design or creative career, you know, get a leg up or learn from our mistakes. Same as always, right? So check that one out. And then we also have one more announcement here for some free stuff coming out, and then we'll get to our main topic. Chris,
do we want to save that announcement until we do the story?
Oh, I see. This announcement is tied to a failure. So we're going to tie it in. That's good. Mm-hmm. What do they call that? They call that a teaser?
It's like turning lemons into lemonade.
All right. I like it, Chris. You got to stay tuned to hear how one of our failures turned into something good that we're sharing with you guys for free. So cool. Well, I think we did it all. We got through all of our notes. Thanks for getting through the news there. We got a ton of stuff. I'm sure I'm even forgetting about something, but let's get into it. Let's get into this topic of failures, and, you know, not just the failures, which I always love a story about something that went wrong. That's always fun to listen to, but also kind of the lesson learned from it and anything we can kind of like glean from this mistake to try and help in the future. Cause that's how humans learn, right? Go out, you touch a hot stove and your brain goes, okay, don't do that again. So
maybe
this time it won't work. Chad, let's start with you, man. What's
don't make mistakes. Right?
Good night, everybody.
Is my wife here? Wait. No, I make so many. It's unreal. It was really hard to even like think about this topic because there's just so many. And, you know, I agree. I think that, you got to fail a bunch of times before you can succeed at anything. And that's part of the fun is learning. And it's not fun getting your hand burnt on a stove. That's definitely not fun, but hopefully you only do that a couple times before you learn, if you're me. But yeah, so I'd say that if I'm starting off this round table of failures, I'm going to start with I don't know if this is necessarily a failure, but it was a mistake that I made that I think I won't make again, which is when I came from production and my brain was like hardwired for years in the production mindset of deadline, bust my to like get the things done, staying late all the time, just like you're constantly running a marathon over and over and over and over and over again. And that mentality changed for me when I went from working in a video production or post-production, motion design production, what have you, to a software company. It was like you're a racehorse. I'm gonna try an analogy right now, dude.
This is good.
I'm gonna see if it works. You tell me if it's any good.
I'm gonna get the analogy pen out. See how many we go through this time. One. Go ahead.
So it's not, I'm not, now don't take offense at this, but it's like taking a racehorse who's sort of like groomed for going fast and whatnot, and then putting him in sort of like a merry-go-round. And now it's doing something useful. It's, you know, bringing people a lot of joy, but it's not like going super fast all the time. And there's not a ton of pressure to win. It's just, you know, you're there giving people rides and helping people. So for me, I had this, like, it took me a little while to like, for my brain to sort of make that switch and not treat every piece of software, everything that we did as like a hard deadline, like, oh my gosh, we got to get this done or we're going to be in deep trouble. So it took me a year at GSG to kind of switch that gear and like, okay, I'm not in that world anymore. I'm in this world. So it's not that the challenges are any less intense. They're just in different ways. And time is always, we're always fighting against deadlines, but in software, it's much different. So I guess it was a matter of like, I wish I had just been open to that and like tried not to assume that everything works that way. So the lesson learned is that just recognize that your experience that you bring to any job, any new endeavor, isn't exactly like it was at the last place you were at. So don't take that baggage with you. Just be open to the new process, the new way of doing things, and sort of take stock, I guess. And I think you guys have even said this, like for the first probably 6 to 9 months of me being at GSG, I was like super quiet and like chill and like just trying to like learn all the different ways this place works. But and then after a while, when I got comfortable and I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I'm starting to understand this. I'm going to get more comfortable and sort of come out of my shell a little bit. So yeah, that was my, that's my first one, is just not holding on to, not expecting everything that you do to be exactly like the things you've already done.
Mm. Well, yeah, I just wanted to speak to that too, because I mostly take it as a compliment. You know, it's I know you said, like, you know, you take this thing that's like ready to go real fast and like kind of slow it down. But to me, when I started a company, maybe this is too inside baseball, but hopefully this is helpful to some of you out there. When I started a company, one of the things that stood out was like, I get to make the rules. It's like my world that I could choose. So just for me personally, I chose the things that I like to do. I love work, and I know that you love to work, right? It's not about working less, but it's about working on things the way that I like to work on them. And as I started building a team and bringing people in, that culture kind of, you know, brought its, you know, just it was a part of the culture as it grew. So, you know, to me, it's about putting good people finding good people that are good at what they love to do, that are naturally passionate about it, where you don't, you know, I don't have to tell you to go work. You like working. That's the whole point. And I've liked to work for so many years that what I wanted to do is build something where I could show up and mostly do what I liked. And I got rid of all the other stuff. And part of the other stuff was all the constant stress in production, constant stress and last minute changes and all that stuff. And we still go through that. Don't get me wrong. There are times where there's like a last minute change, or this has to go out, or a blog post has to get out. And some days we do have to stay up late, but I didn't want that to be like,
but it's so much better,
right?
It's so much better when you're doing it with your friends, and it's all to make something that you truly all believe in. And it's for me, I think it's more fulfilling to know that the sacrifices in time that we make in terms of like putting in more hours on something is going to go towards making someone else's job out there easier, better, and all those things. And so that when we have those parties at NAB and people come up and they say, oh, you know, thanks for doing that tutorial. You taught me how to do this one thing and it got me through this job. That's why we do it.
I should say, last thing is, anyone in production too, I think one of the things is to find your culture. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to like not be in production, but there are different places that have different cultures. Some are more chill than others. So I've definitely,
I'm going to get to that one. That one's one of my other ones.
Well, yeah. I want to add to your analogy, Chad, because you said you came in and you're thinking of it like a racehorse, but like, let's say you're riding a racehorse and you go and you grab the fastest racehorse and you just try and get across the finish line, where I think about things more like we're herding sheep. We got all these projects and there are all these different sheep and we have to get them all across the finish line. So
yeah,
they're all
constantly
moving forward as a group, not getting one across as fast as possible, but moving dozens of projects that are simultaneously being worked on, or things that kind of happen again and again, like new tutorials, new podcasts, new live streams. Like those happen again and again and again. So yeah, it's getting,
and we own the sheep, which is like, in the race course analogy, like I'm just a rider. Like I don't own the horse. Like I just ride it and hopefully, you know, we win and the sponsors are happy. Whereas like in software and at GSG, it's like, yeah, we're herding all these sheep. And what's great, when they all reach the finish line, they're all things that we care about. They're mm-hmm. things that we nurtured from little lambs. Is that what a baby? This analogy is going off the rails, dude. Like, right. But it's great. I love it. But yeah, it's like we've nursed them and now they're crossing the finish line and we're like the proud shepherds like standing there.
Love it. Chris, you want to share one of your failures over the last few years?
Sure. I want to start out with the Grayscale Gorilla one as well. And in the very beginning, me and Nick had met at a meetup in Chicago, and I started recording a couple of tutorials for Grayscale Gorilla. So that's mostly what we've been doing. And then at NAB that year, you and I got to talking about this idea that you wanted to work on. Nick wanted to work on this new product called CityKit. And he's describing to me exactly what he was going to do with CityKit. And I remember we're sitting there over beers talking about all these details. I go, no, that's not how you do it. You do it this way. And you grab a cloner, you do this stuff, you do all these crazy things. And you go, dude, you're making CityKit. I was like, all right. And I was so excited. And, you know, but prior to this, you know, at this point, all you had was LightKit. LightKit was the primary, was the Grayscale Gorilla product. And we were doing tutorials. So I dove in really like headfirst into CityKit. And the core part of CityKit was pretty straightforward. It's a complex setup, but it did not take long to put together, like, I want to say almost like the city engine, like where is downtown? Where's the fall off? How did these things happen? There's all these different parts that came together pretty quick. And then I started working on phase two, and phase two was making a series of different, and at this point we weren't doing any code. This was all Expresso. I started making a series of Expresso driven buildings so that you could change parameters and get different variations of like these different buildings. So there's like a round building rig and a skyscraper building rig, and then these tiny little apartment rigs. And they were in, like, we're talking hundreds of nodes in every single one of these. And I was doing all this clever stuff where it was like pseudo random. So there's like the seed, but the seed would be fed through all these range mappers, and the range mappers would be these crazy remappings of the one number. But essentially, if you toggle up, like if you went from 1000 to 1001, the range mapper made that number change so much that all the variables visually look like they had changed. The point being is I went and I made like six or seven different building rigs, and all of them were incredibly complex. All of these did all these different things, and there's ways of generating, oh, you know, tons and tons of different buildings. And I was working on those for like 2 months. It was like the main thing. At this point, I was still working a different full-time job, but that was like my hobby. Was all I did was obsess over making these building rigs. I was working on them. And it was really fun. And I was super excited. I was super proud of them. They were super great. And then me and Nick sit down to do a Skype phone call. And he had been seeing progress on the buildings, and they're all working great. And we go and we're kind of looking at the final product. It's all been put together, and here's what we're going to do. And it's like all these different building rigs inside of CityKit. And Nick and I are both on the call, and we're both kind of playing with it. And the frame rate was so terrible, it wouldn't run. It couldn't process. Every time you did anything, it would do these massive recalculations and just like hold up. So it's like, okay, you're getting like one frame a second if you're lucky. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, it's fine. We're going to do this. And then, you know, after you do all these, they could delete the Expresso tag. And Nick's like, I don't know. Like it's just unusable. Like they look really cool. All the functionality is amazing. I love it, but it's not usable. This isn't practical. And we were going for like an hour where I was like, oh, but maybe we could do this.
Oh man, I feel bad just even hearing this. It's just breaking my heart.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, Nick was just like, it all came down to, you're like, we need to make a tool that people are going to be able to use and iterate and work quickly in. And I remember at that time, my heart was broken as well. But I agreed with what Nick was saying. I completely agreed with it. And I think this is where you decided that the two of us were going to work together for a long time, because you're there. And I was like, Nick, I know you're right and I agree with you, but I can't agree with you until like tomorrow. Like, give me until tomorrow and then I will completely agree with you. But right now I can't agree. And yeah, and then we move forward, and like 2 months of work turned into us just using those rigs to build the kind of baked out versions of a bunch of like 100 different buildings. We used my rigs to do that. Now, of course, we could have modeled those in probably like 3 days. Instead, we spent 2 months developing advanced rigs to make those buildings. And oh man, it was heartbreaking. But it was also like, I could just see all of that work like going down the drain, but it's like, but I have to, for this to be a good usable product, that has to happen. But man,
that was a tough conversation. I mean, we learned a lot about, I learned a lot about like working with other people in that moment. And I also knew that we'd be working a long time together, because to have that kind of insight, I think is really difficult to be like, I need a day to go be sad, and then I think I'll be okay tomorrow. Like, I would have like, that's like, that's so hard to find somebody like that, you know?
Yeah, that's not, that's a rare thing. Like, Chris, like, your reaction is not, it's not what a lot of people would do in that situation, I think. And that shows your maturity and your ability to be objective about the tools. And that's a really fantastic quality to have. And it's why I think we are sitting here having this podcast, is that sort of mentality and that ability to adjust and say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to take my ego and my all that stuff and put it over here for a minute and really look at this like a real user would. And yeah, it hurts when Nick says it's not usable.
It's beautiful, but it doesn't.
Yeah, but like, your ability to be like, you're right, it sucks, and I'm mad, I'm going to have a day of just like stewing on this, but I know you're right. And like, that maturity and that ability to look at it with those goggles on, that's awesome, man. Like, that's why we're here. That's why we've made so many great products since then.
Do you think that, as far as like a lesson learned or something, or like a new way to approach software development or a project, do you think that you approach it in a different way because of that?
There's still a problem that we can bump into. There's a lot of things you just don't know until you've got all the pieces in place. Like, the number of times that we've worked on a plugin and then we discovered like the heart of the plugin wasn't what we were aiming for. It turned out to be something else. And you can't know that until you put all the pieces together. But something that we learned and that we do a lot of is kind of prototyping and trying to aim for a worst case scenario early on, where it's like, okay, that's cool, but what if there was 100 of them? Like, what, you know, what if, you know,
stress testing.
Yeah, stress testing to larger levels. And those, and that stuff can be tricky. We're actually working on a plugin right now that I can't name names, but where it was like, okay, we're working on it, and then we started stress testing it. We finally had enough of the parts to stress test, and it was not as fast as it needed to be. It needed to be faster. And we had to go back, but it was kind of the early step that we could know that. And we were able to step back and figure out a different way of approaching it that like dramatically improved it and increased the speed. And knowing that we have to do those stress tests quickly, early, get prototypes out quickly, and keep in mind where you got to think about like, okay, where are the weak points of this going to be? And I mean, you know, it's like, okay, I was thinking during CityKit, the early days of CityKit, I was thinking pure functionality. Like, we're going to make infinite buildings. And it's like, oh, nope, this doesn't work. And it's not practical. And I'd also say that I think I searched for those somewhat recently, you know, a while ago, but I searched for them. And I don't think I could find them. I think the buildings might be on some like backup drive somewhere. I don't know where they are. At this point, I'd say they're horribly out of date and it wouldn't be worth doing anything.
That was part of the grieving process.
It
was like
they just have to go. You brought a boat and sailed them off to like a river. They went over a waterfall.
Oh, that's so sad.
That is sad. Oh,
but also inspiring.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite stories. Working with Chris, it's like the opposite of when the Grinch smiles. It was like the opposite. I just got more and more sad.
Like, the curlies on the frown.
Let me share something, because I've definitely messed up a lot of stuff. I think the big one that I've talked a lot about that I won't go into so much detail, but I just wanted to kind of get it out of the way, because I think it, to me, it's like a career wise early on was a huge mistake, was not learning about how to talk to clients and design principles and what I now call like the hard stuff to learn when you're young and new into something. I really regret not spending more time like just focusing on design and focusing on typography and all the things that ended up becoming such a big part of my career, not even just Grayscale Gorilla, but just as an animator, as an After Effects artist, as an eventual 3D artist. I just never would have imagined that like color theory and typography and rule of thirds and like a hierarchy and all those things that I just wish I paid more attention to that in general. You know, so I've talked about that many, many times, but I had to throw that one in there. But I wanted to talk more about stuff that I don't talk about as much, especially, you know, on this podcast. you know, I'll speak to, I got two big ones here. What do I pick? Let me talk about early on in starting Grayscale Gorilla, and early on in that moment, one of the mistakes that I made. So I left my full-time gig in 2009 to explore this idea and build Grayscale Gorilla and, you know, play with Cinema 4D. And, you know, you've probably heard the story, start making plugins, start working with Chris. And at the same time, I felt like I had all this extra time, right? Like I left and I started the company and that was working and making tutorials and that was really fun. And I thought, well, you know, I basically had this mindset of like, I have all this extra time now that I don't have a full-time gig to go to, and I could start Grayscale Gorilla. And I also was working on new iPhone apps. So I had two pretty successful iPhone apps up on the iTunes store at the time. And I decided to like go all in on this big third idea. And so let's talk about that one. I mean, I have many mistakes here that all kind of tie into the same idea, but it all, to me, it came down to focus. Like I didn't focus on one thing. And what I didn't realize was like how much work starting a business from scratch was going to be. And I think I'm glad I didn't know how much work it would be in a way. Like maybe I wouldn't have like gone and done it, but like it's hard to know, kind of like what Chris said, it's like it's hard to know how much work something is or how it fits into the world until you are there. And so to me, a mistake that I made when I left was not focusing all of my energy on Grayscale Gorilla 100%. I quickly learned that lesson, but it took me starting a new iPhone app that was not successful. I started a t-shirt company. Bonus points to anybody that knows the name of my t-shirt company. Put that in the comments. I started a site called MakeCoolShit.com.
Oh, I remember that.
Still have that URL. Love that URL. MakeCoolShit.com. And started making videos about basically, you know, how I was running my business and learning how to do customer support and all that stuff. And all those things did not pan out, right?
Oh, you also had Real Roulette.
Real Roulette. That was even.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
So that was even a little bit later on. I was also building, by the way, at that time, which never got released, a portfolio site, website to help students like build and freelancers build a beautiful portfolio site.
And, like before Cargo Collective and Squarespace and all that.
Yeah, a few of them were just starting to. Yeah, it was. I think it was before Cargo, before Squarespace, but there were a couple already pump like starting. But it was pretty early on, and so to me, looking back on it, like I don't regret trying all these things, and I had a million ideas. But what I thought was, okay, well, I have a million ideas and this one is working, so that means the other 1,000 of them will also work. That was the mistake. I'm so amazing at what I'm
doing. You were Midas.
I can do no wrong. I have this iPhone app that went really well, and Grayscale Gorilla is turning out to be a success, and people are like, and what the mistake I made was like, was it a mistake? Like, was it a mistake to push and try new things? I don't think so. But not remembering how hard starting a business can be is a for sure a mistake. And it's still something, you know, I bump into, not so much with Grayscale Gorilla anymore, but in general, changing habits, changing your life, doing something new. I feel like at the right time of night or at the right time of morning, something seems like it's just so easy, right? Like working out or something, like, oh yeah, I'm just going to start working out. But we all know like changing habits and changing what you do all day is so hard. So I'm trying to like wrap this into a general way of what I learned, but basically I learned pretty early to realize, like, okay, I have to go learn how I had the Cinema 4D thing, that this is it, and then I'll be done. I knew I was good at learning Cinema 4D and good at teaching. I knew that I was good at making videos. And what I didn't realize was all the other secondary stuff that I had to go learn to make all the other stuff possible. So like running customer support and, you know, making sure the website was up and making sure like our bandwidth wasn't going over, and figuring out e-commerce and how to sell plugins and how to get zip files to people and all the backend stuff was just such a learning process to me that I wish I a little bit like focused a little bit more on that early on. So that's a big one. All right. Where do we start, Chad?
Back to Chad.
Do we have, how many do you think? We're running kind of long. Maybe I'll just do one more.
Yeah, I think we got time.
Because I don't know if we'll be able to, we won't
I
be able to.
Two I wanted to mention. So I can do them quick.
What are you thinking? Should we just do, just put them together?
Yeah, let's, we'll do one more round around. And if you got two quick ones, we could do that. That's fine.
Well, I'll just, okay, so real quick, first one, I'm just going to do my two and then we'll be done. I think one mistake that I think a lot of people make, I know I made it, was holding on too long and not taking more risks with my career. I sort of got comfortable and knew that it wasn't exactly healthy, some of the places, some of the studios that I was at. Healthy emotionally, physically, and I just held on too long because I was afraid of not being able to get another job. If I went freelance, would I be able to make as much money? What if I tried something else completely? Would I fail? And so that fear and that not knowing kept me in places that I don't think I should have been for as long as I was. And the downside of being at a place that's not a good fit is that you end up being sort of, you become sort of negative and your health deteriorates and you start to not want to go to work and just all the stuff that you don't ever want to happen to you starts to happen. And it was all because I was just afraid of making a change. I made the change, came here, and it was the best change I've made in my professional career, hands down. And I think that if I could go back in time and be like, yeah, you know what? Don't worry so much. Everything has a way of working out. You'll be okay. Take the risk. Go do this. Go do that. I'd probably be, I will have definitely spent less years commuting and probably be a lot happier and healthier for it. And so I guess that was the big one. But I think the most entertaining one that you'll hear me, my most entertaining mistake for the audience will be not giving Cinema 4D a chance earlier than I did. And now you've probably heard this. If you haven't, then go listen to the multiple times I've told the story. But for many years, I looked down my nose at Cinema 4D and thought of it as a hobbyist toy. And it wasn't until I think 15 or 16, might have been 15 or 16, that I actually looked at it as an actual production, a viable production tool, and was surprised. So that my mistake was not recognizing the trend that was happening earlier and giving it a chance. But really, I was judging a book by its cover. I was actually looking at the I was judging the software based on the work that I was seeing that was sort of put in front of me, and I didn't dig deeper. And that lesson carries over beyond just like software or silliness, but in life, you know, not judging a book by its cover, not judging someone by one thing, by their actions, not by their words. And so that really like resonates in my entire career. I've had to relearn that lesson over and over and over again. I'm getting better at recognizing it now, but it's something that I think everybody could be better at. Everybody sort of believes what other people say or sometimes will follow a crowd's decision or a crowd's opinion about a certain subject or piece of work or whatnot, instead of digging in and like forming their own opinion about it and really seeing what it means to them. And I think that that's something that everybody could be better at, I think. And I know I sure could, and I'm learning and I'm trying to get better at that as I go through life. But, that was a mistake by me. I should have given it a chance earlier. I should have paid attention to the community that was growing behind it. I got on the train a little bit late, but glad to be here.
We're so glad.
Glad to be here, baby.
You joined us. If it was, that's okay with me.
Better late than never, right? Come on.
I remember when you told me too, you're like, look, I know you're going to hate me, but I think I'm going to start using Cinema 4D. And I'm like, are you kidding? Hate you. I was hugging you.
That was like half res. And it was like, I feel like that was my little coming out party. And so I was like basically walking around being, yeah, so I'm making the switch, I'm joining. And everybody was so, I was expecting everybody to be like, I told you so, you know, you jerk, or, you know, whatever. And just like, you know, ha, giving me the Nelson, ha ha, you know. But it wasn't like that. Everybody was super cool, at least to my face. Like everybody was like super cool about it. And like, wow, that's awesome. Glad to have you. It's going to be great. And then, yeah, I remember you, you know, basically just giving me a hug. And it was almost like at that moment I was hired. It was weird. and it sort of came, it snowballed from there. But yeah, so to those of you out there, form your own opinion with your own research, do your own homework, and you'll be better for it.
Oh, that's a good one. Chris, you said you have a couple?
Yeah, I got two. I'll get through them pretty quick. The first one, I think we might have mentioned in our like working habits podcast, but the next, it was probably, is the period in my life that I probably made myself the most miserable, which was the weird period too long. There was 2 months where I was joining Grayscale Gorilla and the office that we were all going to share wasn't quite ready yet. So I had quit my previous job and I was, and at this, for a long time, me and Nick were working together. I wasn't like officially Grayscale Gorilla. We just worked together to make products and I made lots of tutorials. So I was like, I was like working with Grayscale Gorilla full time in all but name. But so for this time I was working on like whatever the next product was at the time. I'm not sure what it was. Maybe it was Transform. I think it might have been Transform at that time. It was totally Transform we were working on. But I made a home office for these. Well, there's a little bit more to the story where this co-op space was supposed to be ready quickly. It was like 2 weeks. I was like, okay, cool. I've kind of got like this little vacation. I'm going to like take things easy. I'm still working on things, but I've got all this free time now. And then as with so many things in life, especially construction takes longer than you think it's going to. So you're talking to contractors. It's like, oh yeah, that'll be in like 5 days or 2 weeks, 2 months. And it just kept stretching and stretching out where we didn't have this new space to go into. So I put myself in, I think, the worst situation you could trying to work from home, which is I kept thinking that it's like, I won't be here too long, so I don't have to take it too seriously. And it kept stretching out. And I had terrible separation between home life and work life. I was doing all the same work on the same machine. I could wake up in the morning and be like, I don't have to work right now because I can do anything any point in the day. But then later in the day, even though it's like, okay, it's like 9 at night, but I kind of feel like I should be working. So I was never like super working and I was never, but I always felt obligated to be working on something. So it's just a miserable, like in between place that just, it's like a recipe.
Upside down.
Yeah. It was a recipe for being miserable. It was like, I put myself into like this, like purgatory, this in between where it's like, I was never working, but I was always working. And it's just, that means you're miserable in both places. And man, that was so awful. There was other things along that point where it's just like, I messed my sleep schedule up so much because I didn't have any kind of regularity to it. And I was like a homebody where I could go and hang out with people, but I wasn't like doing industry things that much. There was no structure to it. So all of the reasons why working home has been amazing this year, or how long have we been, like, how long since the office went away? I'm trying to remember. Have we been, is it 1 year, 2 years?
No, it's over 2 years.
Okay, 2 years. A full 2 years now. It's been perfect. There's been like no problems because of all the lessons I learned there about separating home and work, and about having, trying to start at a regular time and ending at a pretty regular time. I have two different desks and two different computers. And it's like, okay, this one I can go and do fun stuff and work on projects and play video games, or, you know, do art stuff. And then I got my work computer where I go into a different space and I'm there and I'm at work and taking a walk beforehand and, you know, going out of your way to, like, meet with other people doing similar work and going to meetups and making sure you're doing all those. So I had that horrible time in order to teach me all the good lessons in order to make this last 2 years a really good at working from home. And, like, just thinking of, the only thing that changed was, like, my mindset, like, and setting things up properly, because, you know, everything else is the same. Like, I'm working from the same place, but different rules completely.
It's totally a mindset. And I take it for granted, honestly. I take my ability to work from home for granted. And I just, like, assume that everybody else has this ability. Oh yeah, you're disciplined and you just go in here and you do your thing and that's how it is. But yeah, I forget that it's hard. I'm sort of an anomaly that way. And I can't even imagine going through what you just described. That sounds terrible. And I wouldn't want to live that way. That would be really hard. But I think you're onto something there. Like, there's probably a great blog post in there about, like, I would like to know more about how you set up the processes to overcome that, because I think a lot of people are going to be struggling with that in the next couple of years, even now.
I think we have a whole podcast about that one. We probably go track it down. Let's make a note about that.
We have one about working from home.
We have one about morning routines.
I'm terrible in the it locked in the cellar moment where our sitcom, you know, flashbacks, because I can't even remember what we've done. So you go to me and it'll just be like a white screen.
It'll be like, I don't remember any of this. I'm just trying to.
I'm pretty sure that never happened. No, it did, Chad. I swear to God.
You're just constantly checking the lock again.
I'm just like jimmying the door, like MacGyvering anything I can to get out of the cellar.
Won't stop reminiscing.
Chris farted. Nick is reminiscing.
Nick's on his 10th analogy. Get me out of here.
Oh my God.
All right, so, you got another one.
I have another one, and this is a story I'd almost never ever tell anybody this story because
this sounds good already.
Well, because it was probably the biggest failure, and this is like a year and a half long failure, and it's just like this lost period in like my professional life in a lot of ways. And neither of you have heard this story, but when me and my buddies from college graduated, I convinced everybody that not only should we all move out of our parents' houses and go, like, rent a house and live out on our own, but that we should start a business together. So me and my friends started a business, like, for real business. Then there was a little bit of a mix of everything, where there's like design and 3D and web, a little bit of everything. And we did all the paperwork. It was a legal LLC, and everything that could go wrong went wrong. We had no idea what we were doing. In fact, a big credit to the administrator at the college, who's like my favorite teacher ever in my entire life. But we told him, we're going to leave. We're going to try and start our business. And he said, and I distinctly remember him saying, yeah, it's probably a good idea to go let the real world beat you around a little bit. And I remember at the time, I didn't understand what he meant at the time. And a year and a half later, it's like, oh, now I understand. it was going to fail from the get-go. We didn't have any kind of a network. We didn't know anybody. And there's like four of us in this. And, you know, there's some different aspects here. But, you know, at this point, I'm like super into Cinema 4D. I was also teaching Cinema 4D at this time. But I ended up being the most technical of the group, but that meant like any web work, it had to be me. And then whenever we had to figure out anything complex, it end up being me. And so I was getting burnt out from that element alone. But we didn't have any contacts. We didn't have any regular. We hadn't been working in the industry, so we didn't.
What was
have
the
any
business? What were you trying to do?
We were just like, it was kind of a full service, like, grab. We didn't even know the terminology properly of everything, of like how to describe ourselves. So it was just kind of like,
how can I invest?
It was almost like, you know, imagine you go to like just a little corner store, like in a small town, and you're like, oh, hey, we just worked from home. So that's the only good part of our decisions. But it was kind of like, oh yeah, we do everything. We'll do web stuff. Like, we'll develop that. Oh, we'll do video. We'll film video for you and edit it. We will do graphic design for you. We will do, it's kind of like anything that tangentially touches our industry. We're like, yeah, we'll do that. So we had no focus.
We had computer stuff.
Yeah, computer stuff. Like anything that you needed done on the computer, we will do that. And it was just utterly miserable. And we, as a group, we didn't know what we didn't know. And we didn't have other people to talk to about it. I didn't have like 10 years of clients I could go back to and be like, oh, look, I've got this separate company now. Like, you know, we can do this work and we can do it faster and cheaper. None of that. So we were going to like local business association, like networking events to like shake hands with like, the barber down the street and like super duper local things.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
It was ridiculous. And I mean, we were putting in a decent amount of effort, but it was, a lot of it was like spinning our wheels. And we were also working, a bunch of us were working at a country club at the time. And so most of our work ended up coming from members at the country club, where they started finding out that we did the website for the country club, and then other people started asking to do websites. But of all the work we were doing, I hated websites the most. And I mean, at this point, I know nothing about web at all, but yeah, I was making websites for different companies, and it was miserable, and we didn't know how to negotiate. We didn't know how to establish contracts up front. So we constantly were, we didn't know what to charge for anything. So we were negotiating in these ridiculously low prices. And then, but we didn't get them in writing. Like, everything you could do wrong, we were doing wrong.
Meanwhile, your clientele are a bunch of like successful business people at a country club.
Exactly.
Like, look at these rubes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, on the website, like, we were personally, just us as a group, we're going out with like a digital camera and taking photos of the golf course and then building the website and proposing these things. And I'm coming up with like clever little, you know, this is older web at this point. We're talking like 2003, 2004. And it's, you know, it was like, oh, look, I figured out a way of like making this like animate out. It like moves out when you mouse over. It's like, oh my God, that's so cool. It's so cool. We have to implement it somehow. So it, like, a lot of like, oh, I discovered how to do this. So we have to do it. Not we because of design purposes, just because it's a cool thing. And the biggest, honestly, one of the biggest problems we had as a group was we kept on thinking that everything would be perfect if we just did this one thing, where it was like, oh, we need to get a really good computer. If we get a really good computer, that's going to enable us to do this and this and this and this. So we can kind of wait for that to happen. And then we get that computer. It's like, well, that's good, but we need a really good camera. We need to buy a good camera. And if we had the camera, we could do all these good things and we could start filming these things. And so let's wait for the camera and let's do some research and then wait for the camera to arrive. Oh, the camera arrived, but why don't we go and buy an entire light kit? So we can actually set up lighting to do all these different things. We're going to work on all these short films. So we need a light kit, and we'll just wait for that light kit to come along. It's like, well, why do we buy a tower computer? Because now we're not mobile. It really should have been a laptop. And we kept doing that kind of thing over and over again. And it's shocking to think back on that. But we were so stuck on like the minutiae, on the tiny details, that we were never thinking big picture on anything. Mm-hmm. And it was essentially like, it was a doomed venture from the get-go. And really, the business just kind of faded away. There wasn't
You learned so many, like, so many big lessons that it takes some people years to, like, okay, you learned, like, that the tools are not the most important part, right? That's a huge, that's, like, such a big part of any new thing that it takes a long time to figure out. Like, the tools are ultimately not gonna save you. Customers, like getting customers. What was the other one? Like, just like the idea of like marketing and getting the word out and where to do that. Like, it just seems like you guys learned so much in such a short amount of time.
It was,
amazing.
Yeah, there was a lot of learning just across the board on everything. Where, and these are lessons that I could apply later, but during those year, during that year and a half, it was just like slowly falling apart, and all of us being like, well, if we do this, I think we can save it and it'll be good. And it never was. But I think, and you guys will know this, especially you, Nick, I think the reason that I'm always, wait, what's the plan? What are, like, essentially, what are the marching orders? What, like, I want to know, when is this due? When are we doing this? I want the plan. Because during that time, there was never a plan. And I want, like, leaving things. Actually, there's a thing I learned there, which is a lot of people keep things very abstract and amorphous. And I always envision it as like this cloud above your head where it's like, I've got this idea, there's this concept, but it's very indistinct. It's just kind of floating there. And it's always there, and I'm always aware of it, and I'm always thinking about it, but I don't make things concrete. Like, you get this cloud instead of concrete. And you can do that for everything in your life. Like, you can treat relationships that way. You can treat like your schedule that way. You can treat your hobbies that way. You can treat your political ideologies that way. You can treat like scientific stuff that way. And during that time, I kind of was like, okay, we are living in this cloud zone, and I want to live in like the concrete zone. Mm-hmm. I want to know the exact structure and plan and time and layout. And what do I really think about this thing? Instead of that time, we're just like, sort of this. Maybe if we lean this way, things will be a little bit better. Like, no, like that was my big takeaway. And that's why I always push for us having concrete, distinct ideas, because of that horrible time.
Well, yeah, you're also describing that what I bump up against all the time, which is this like white page thinking of like, well, I could do anything. So where do I start, and what's the new, like, it's all ideas until you grab something. And to me, it's almost like a fret. Okay, hold on. Analogy alert. I'm writing this down. It's like a fresh batch or old school Legos. I come from a day when Lego was like, didn't come with instructions. It's just like,
it was one brick,
just a bunch of blocks.
No, it was one page. It was a bunch of blocks and one page saying, make this.
Yeah, make stuff.
These days, Lego instructions, you put one or two pieces per page. Right. Back in the mid 80s, every page was like 30, 40 pieces. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was like you had to count the knobs on how far in you had to place the piece and the whole thing.
I think, but you can track the deterioration of Western civilization based on Lego instructions.
It's all been turned. It's like designed for babies now.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I mean, and that kind of speaks to it. It's like, well, until you grab your first two pieces and snap them together, you won't really know where this is going. And to me, it's like a bunch of Lego could be whatever you want. Maybe I'm pushing this analogy too far, but like a big box of Lego is like endless possibility, but you can't live in endless possibility land. And just like what you're saying about the cloud, you can't live in that land. You have to eventually grab two pieces and snap them together. And then like, okay, now you could put the third one together and the fourth one, and then right. It becomes something. And to me, that was a big lesson.
Yeah, early. Just because you can make anything just doesn't mean you should make everything.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. It's like, and that's what I think about even like building the business and even just like what I'm doing this summer. Like that idea of like, you can do anything you want, but you can't do everything you want. And so you have to start deciding. And once you start deciding, things become much more clear. You like Chris, you were saying, like concrete, put something in the ground. And as soon as you put a stake in the ground that doesn't move, this is why I love deadlines, right? Because now it's like, well, it has to be done this day. Okay, that helps, and that helps shrink the scope of a lot of things.
And there's like an actualizing problem that I know I had in the past, and I think that I've bumped into a lot of people that this seems to be trouble, where like this amorphous cloud, like this big box of Lego, it's all potential. And in your head, you can say, like, I've got all this potential, and I can just tell myself that I'm the best. I'm amazing. I can do these. I can do anything I want. But then let's say somebody wants to write, and they've got all these different ideas of things that they might write. They're the great novel that they're going to do, but they never put pen to paper. And once you actually do something, it becomes real. And now you're kind of on the line, and now other people can judge it, and it can be critiqued, and you actually have to do the work. But if you just leave it weird and amorphous, then you can feel good about all the books you might write.
Yeah.
Without
perfect
ever
in your head.
It's fear. It's all fear. It's amorphous because that means you're not committing. You're not risking anything. But you're right. As soon as you put a pen to paper, now it's a risk. And that's the thing that I think that's why I hate the what do you call it? The cloudy,
the amorphous blob.
Yeah,
the
like I'm allergic to that mentality, because for me that cloud represents stress. That cloud represents like, it's not real. I don't know what to do with that. Like my brain understands concrete in a lot of different ways, which is why I kind of operate that way. But yeah, that's a fantastic way of putting it, man. Like as soon as you put that pencil to paper, it becomes real and people can look at it, and all of a sudden you're accountable and you're being critiqued. And
to me, it's almost like the 5-second projects. Why I love that process, and personally I've gone through the process of building 5-second projects and seeing other artists do it. It takes something that's like, oh, I could always do this fun, cool idea in 3D, and puts it and start it, like it almost like writes the first sentence for you for your book. It says this book is about, so for 5-second projects, it says it's 5 seconds long and it's this title. Like this is the title of your project. And for me, it's like that act of writing two things down on the paper starts ideas flowing and starts like we connect the first two Legos for you, and then you can build around it and build the rest. And to me, anytime you could do that is like, that's the creative process, right? Like that is literally why we are doing what we're doing, is taking things that haven't been connected yet, connecting them together in new ways. So yeah, what a lesson to learn, right? Especially in a creative world. Well, here's the thing. I have, so I could tell a story about another mistake, and maybe I'll save it and like, you know, drink too much whiskey one night and like do a sad, you know, Instagram story or something about it. But I want to make sure there's time for Chris. You missed one.
Uh-oh, you're right. Well, you could also kind of set that one up.
No, I want to end with yours, because we promised it from the start, and I have endless amount of failures that I could talk about, but I'd rather hear yours, because yours ends with a happy ending and a bunch of free stuff that is coming out on our site. So why don't you talk about that one?
I might need your help to fill in a couple cracks in this one, but we've been making tools now ever since, ever since I would help with CityKit, you were making Lightkit before that. And we have so many different ideas and all these different plugins and all these different things we want to pursue. And we got all these really cool ideas, and it's impossible to pursue all of them. And we have definitely pursued some for a while that just kind of die off. But then there's other ones. There's a handful of weird ones that we pretty much finish them. We completely finish it, and then it never quite found the right place to live. And so back in 2012, I think the idea was that this was a companion piece to TextureKit.
Yeah, I think that was the original idea.
Yeah, so we had TextureKit, and you have all these different textures, and we want to come up with a way of quickly like doing some modifications on top of them, or just making cool texture stuff. And we spent a bunch of time really like bouncing back and forth, changing things. And we came up with a suite of, I'm not even sure, is it maybe like 14, it was 14 scripts. And these were texture tools. We were just making these texture tool scripts. And then we were like, you know, these are pretty good. We want them to be a little bit more organized, have a little more control. So we're going to change them into plugins. So now we have like 14 little plugins, like simple functionality plugins. And we worked on them, and we changed them. We iterated, and we added like alternative functionality. So if you hold down like the Alt button, it would do a slightly different thing. We learned a bunch from it, and they were pretty much completely ready to go. The Grayscale Gorilla texture tools. And they were so ready to go that at the very first half res, you announced them on stage. Like, these are coming out really, really soon, everybody.
That's a lesson I'm still learning.
that's a lesson the company is still learning.
Yep. Announce it before it's out the door. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no, totally. So yeah, these were announced and essentially ready to ship. And we were talking about some of the free page and some of the free downloads. And I kind of remembered that we had developed these texture tools. And we said we should launch these into the world. We should make these live. They just exist. Let's just release them for free because they're doing no good rotting on our hard drives over here. So we are going to be including in the free downloads the entire suite of Grayscale Gorilla texture tools.
Woohoo. Dude, so, I'm so glad. It's been so long since I've played with them. I gotta like relearn what all of them did. But one of my favorite ones that I'm excited to like install and use is the like make a bunch of different colors.
Yes.
And then I want to say it's also like apply those. Am I talking above my
paper? No, no, you're totally on.
Yes. Okay, good. So
yeah, it's a bunch of simple functionality ones, but yeah, hit it.
Yeah, like that to me I do all the time, which is like I want like 20 different textures that are all similar and all different colors, and I want you to apply them to these 20 different objects. And I know I remember those two in particular because I use that I use that functionality all the time. So I'm excited to get those out. And so by the time this podcast goes out, it should be on the free downloads page. If it's not, it might be one more day. But I promise it won't be like 2000
years.
Yeah, it won't be 7 years until these are launched. Chris and the team really put a lot of effort into updating these and making sure they're working in new versions and Cinema 4D. And so we're excited to get these out. And so head over to the free downloads page. Check out not only that, but the NAB stuff and free models and all the fun stuff we have over there. And we'll be adding more stuff over there over the year. So, yeah. Dude, texture tools, baby.
Texture tools. I'm excited. We had to update them to work with reflectance because a couple of them deal with reflection. So it is going to be compatible with R17, 18, and 19 in spite of it being like a six, seven-year-old series of plugins.
Well, yeah, if it was at the first half res, then that was over 6 years ago now.
But that's crazy. That's exciting.
Well, good. Let's end that one. Thanks for sticking around today for the a slightly longer one. And thanks for listening. If you made it this far, thanks for listening to the podcast and it being a part of episode 100 and all the other shows over the last few years. It's fun. Like I really enjoy sharing stories and again, like trying to talk through mistakes I've made in my career to hopefully help the next person. To me, that's not just to me. It's pretty obvious when you think about it, but that's how humans exist. We all mess up and then we write down what we got right and what we got wrong so that the next person can go read that book or watch this podcast or learn that lesson. And now they don't, you know, not everyone has to remake the light bulb. And so that's what I love about sharing and going through some of these lessons and just trying to help. That's what we're here to do. That's what we're trying to do anyway. Hopefully it's been fun for you too. I know it's been fun for us. Thanks again for coming to the 100th episode. This will end our season for now. I haven't really announced the next season yet, but stick around. We have plenty of stuff coming out this year over on YouTube. If you're here on YouTube now, what do the kids say? Like and subscribe, ring that bell. Ring that bell. Ding, ding. All right, friends, thank you so much, Chris, Chad. It's been a pleasure doing this podcast with you as well. I've had a ton of fun, and for all of you listening, thank you so much.
Thanks everybody.
I appreciate it. Oh, don't forget, we have our favorite episodes as well over on the blog. So if you're needing over the summer a little podcast break, go back and check out some of our favorites.
Our blog has got lots of cool stuff. Go check it out.
Yeah, blog's been on fire lately. Thank you, Michael. All right. Cheers and beers, everybody. Happy podcast. Happy 100. We'll see you soon. And for now, thanks again for watching Grayscale Gorilla Podcast. See ya. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.